Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Devo Days of Our Lives and Friends. And tonight, this is Carrie, I'm your hostess, and we have Miss Anna here tonight.
Hello.
And we have Miss Marianne.
Hi, everyone.
So, and we will be discussing the last week or two of days, because we really didn't talk about days that much last week during our Emmy show. And our Emmy show is available in the archives. We broadcasted live during the show, so you guys don't just sit there and laugh at us being idiots while we're watching the show. Go ahead and listen to it. Follow us daily on our blog, devoofdaysoflives.blogspot.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Diva Abdul, and we have a Facebook page, Diva Days, and a fan page, Diva of Days of Our Lives. And the links to everything's right here on our show page at Blog Talk Radio. And you could also follow us on Blog Talk Radio, and it'll alert you and stuff when we have new shows coming up. So first, we'll talk about the Emmys from last week.
Yeah.
And, the big shocker, of course, was Days won for Best Writing. Even though the episode that they submitted was easily the best episode of the year last year, with the one with Jack having flashbacks while he was in the cabin during an avalanche. And that was written by Marlene McPherson and, I can't remember his last name, Daryl. And unfortunately, the writers didn't show up to accept the award, so I don't think we ever figured out who accepted the award for them. But, so that's always kind of ironic when you see fired people winning awards. But for that episode, it was pretty good. And, you know, their writing wasn't that bad. There were hits and there were misses. And I think the last few months, other than Lexi's death, it's been, mostly been misses the last 2 or 3 months, I would say. So what do you think of the Best Writing Emmy, Marianne?
You mean the writing Emmy? Yeah.
Yeah, the writing Emmy.
I was surprised this year because I thought there was other years they were better in writing, but I have to agree the writing, their writing wasn't that bad, I didn't think. But it's funny that the episode was for Jack, but yet they won for that, but yet Matt Ashford didn't win his Emmy,
mm-hmm.
which I was hoping that he would. But I've seen better writing, but I've seen worse writing,
mm-hmm.
it was a surprise. I just, you know, Days is always criticized, seems to be always criticized for their writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fans are the hardest. The Days fans are always the hardest on the writing team, I think, no matter who's in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we always have been. There's always something we don't like. Except for the 80s. Always like that.
That's true.
Yeah.
What did you think about the Best Writing Emmy, Anna?
The part I enjoyed the most about it was discussing how hot some of the writers were with Tom Casciello, since one of them was his ex. Well, we got it mixed up because he hadn't seen it, so the guy who accepted it is who we thought was his ex, but then when he actually saw a picture of the event, he realized that his ex, Dave, was behind the person who is accepting it. So anyway, and I can't remember now who it was who accepted it. My mind is going blank. But anyway, but it was, yeah, I mean, you could tell they were very shocked that they won. It was, what, 36 years since the last time they won?
Yeah, a long time.
And, mm-hmm. I mean, surely, Days has just been, Days has had great episodes and great writing off and on through the years. So,
mm-hmm.
I found it mind-boggling that it had been so long since they had won a Best Writing Award. That's pretty pathetic, actually, because I think there's almost a snob I think there's a little bit of a snob system within the Emmy system. But, you know, because Dave does do some wacky things sometimes, but all the shows do. Come on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many personalities and everything does Vicky have on? Did Vicky have on Life to Live? I mean, so, you know, none of the shows are, we can't consider any of them the caliber of BBC or, you know, of PBS. But anyway, so I was shocked that Dave hadn't won a best writing in all those years.
Yeah.
So I was happy for them. You could tell they were shocked. They were humbled by it and everything. And it's always kind of fun to, like, see the people who have been given the big FU and fired. It's always kind of nice to see a little redemption for them and see that they actually, you know, ended up with an Emmy. But, yeah, well, I feel sorry. I mean, I have my things that I liked about Mardar's writing and things I didn't. But, and who knows how much of the good and the bad was the push and pull between them and NBC and everybody else. But I feel kind of sorry for them because they missed out. They got fired right before Outfest. So they didn't
mm-hmm.
get to attend Outfest. And that was a big event surrounding Will's storyline, which they had a
mm-hmm.
big part in writing. They wrote some great stuff for it, really. And so they didn't get to go to that. And then they didn't get to go to the Emmys to accept an Emmy for the work that they had done back, you know, last year. So, I don't know. It was just kind of a shame. You know, I felt kind of bad for them in that regard. So we'll see. I'm. It's just a guess, but I'm wondering if we're really not going to have another one for another many, many years.
Well, the
things that I'm hearing now that are coming out of the new writing is even though they're seasoned veterans and all, I'm not real excited about anything that they're writing so far that I've heard about. But we'll see, I guess. So that's my take on it. For what it's worth.
Oh, yeah.
If they win one next year.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That Lexi mm-hmm. Memorial episode on Friday.
Yeah. But see, those would be Mardar again. Wouldn't that be ironic if they won yet another Emmy for this year for the part they were here, you know, for 6 months?
Yeah, because that would still be them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
yeah,
Dina Higley always took great joy in ruining One Life to Live but walking away with an Emmy, so you never know.
Because she would do it and then an event, a storyline, and so basically she would do like a couple big episodes a year, and she won an Emmy. So that was that's what she did, though.
Well,
and she did it on Days 2 with the plane crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and see, the thing that's frustrating, though, with Days, at least with some of these writing teams, is that sometimes you watch and you're like, that was downright brilliant. And a lot of it depends on the script writer for that episode, because Carolyn Coulton and the episode that I think that aired this week, we'll talk about it later. When we get to Beau and Hope scenes, I want to talk a little bit about that. But,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you can tell when it's a Coulton episode, when it's Carolyn or Richard, you can tell that they're the ones writing
mm-hmm.
it, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so a great script writer can make the worst umbrella story or the worst, you know, breakdown sound great, you know, just by the dialogue and everything. So, but I think the most frustrating thing for me, for Dave, as far as the writing goes, is that they can be downright brilliant and the next day suck beyond belief. And it's that lack of consistency. And I remember reading something that some writer, it might have been Broderick, it might have been some other writer we've heard of, it mentioned in their background that they had been, like, continuity editor or something like that back in the 80s or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
I thought, I don't see continuity editor in the credits anymore. I guess that's one of those things that got,
mm-hmm.
you know, that got cut with the budget, you know. And I think it's so needed. But that's the thing that's frustrating nowadays is that, you know, you can have a brilliant episode, like we're going to talk about some of the stuff we've seen recently, and then you can have an absolute horrible story or even, you know, just episode or whole story that is just so bad, and you're thinking, you know, is this kind of like the B side of the old record, you know, 45s, where it's like, okay, you know, we've got our A game, and then we're going to flip over and we're going to put something that's pure crap on the other side because we know that the A side is going to sell, you know. I don't know. It's like, why can't you do that all the time? I mean, I know it's hard when you write a serialized drama like that. I know. Mm-hmm. I have the utmost respect for the writers, you know, for doing that, for putting out that many episodes of original programming a year. It's unheard of in any other, I mean, there's no other genre that does that kind of thing, really. So I admire that, but it just, it's frustrating when you can see what it can be and then you see what it is sometimes. Or we, the fans, think, oh, they could go this direction. It could be so phenomenal. Or, oh, mm-hmm. they could bring Tony and Andre back, and it would blow everybody out of the water, and, oh, it would be awesome. And, of course, do they do that? No. They bring some character we don't care about back. You know? So it's just frustrating sometimes, the decisions they make. It's just, ugh. Anyway, that's my opinion on it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think with the cast, too, I think Friday kind of proved it, too, with the veterans, when you get them good material, like the Lexi Memorial, and I know Marianne was talking about it, too, the Bo and Hope on Monday's episode with Bo writing the eulogy.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you give them, oh my gosh.
Peter Ruckel did a good job with that.
I'm tearing up already.
Yeah.
I'm such a wuss.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe I should get Botox, and that way I don't have to worry about crying.
Oh, no, I was crying, too, during those, you know, Peter Ruckels and the memorial. Yeah, he did a really good job with that. Yeah. Who wrote that eulogy, actually, the writers that wrote it. What they said was good.
I'm going to pull that up.
Carolyn Coulton, I tweeted it because Carolyn Coulton wrote the script, and it was the episode mm-hmm. where Bo and Hope were at the pub and Sierra's mm-hmm. sitting at the table next to him.
Picture.
And she's doing a card for Theo. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to get into that next, but I just wanted to say that, yeah, it was definitely Carolyn Coulton that did the episode because I looked at it at the end because it was so good. I thought the fact that they layered in the history of the characters and all that, it was really good.
Yeah, it was Grant A. Johnson, Carolyn Coulton, and Albert Allar and Carolyn Coulton wrote the memorial.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I'm trying to think. Lexi's death was Albert Allar and Lacey Dyer, and the next day with Ghost Lexi was Herb Stein and David A. Levinson.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just, you know, yeah. I thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, okay. So
did you guys like how they did it instead of having them in the church and the memorial, so, you know, and actually seeing the funeral? Instead, we saw, like, you know, the get-together afterwards.
Mm-hmm. You know what,
I think I like that. I mean, I was expecting to see like a funeral service and then them go up in the church and do it, but they decided to do it differently, like the gathering afterwards, mm-hmm. and then talk about her.
Yeah, when I first saw, hey, we're not going to be in church, I was actually extremely disappointed. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, they just didn't want to put the church up. I mean, that's flat-out laziness. But what they did at Chez Rouge, and thank God it wasn't the flippin' pub, or I would have had a conniption.
Yeah, it's kind of nice the way they had it set up and stuff.
Yeah, what they did at the actual at Chez Rouge was very well done, and I thought it was nice, everybody sharing stories about Lexi and showing the clips of her as the pacifier, and great scenes with Abe and Lexi, with baby Theo, and telling him that she's pregnant, and finding out that he was autistic. There was, and the scene where Sammy was choking Lexi at the hospital was really funny.
Yeah, when Sammy was talking. Mm-hmm.
Wait, who was choking?
Sammy was choking Lexi, because Lexi said, "I'm going to make sure you don't end up with Brandon."
Yeah.
And I thought it was great because the funerals on the show have been awful. Either haven't been one. I mean, Stefano got nothing. So
that was so
weird.
He got shipped off to Italy.
He got shipped back to Italy.
Yeah, that was so strange. I thought they were going to have a formal memorial, but really it was just each person coming in and like Sammy wondering if he was still alive.
That was good though. You know, with him
I liked Kate's scenes with Stefano. I liked all of it, but I kept thinking we were going to actually see a memorial, and it wasn't really one. There really wasn't one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that bad what they did with Stefano, but Lexi's was done in such a big way. You could see the difference, you know. I mean, and the thing is, too, because I mean, a couple people tweeted, oh, okay, I don't like Lexi, or I only started watching the show. Well, if you just started watching watch the show, you really didn't see Lexi.
Right.
Especially in the
90s. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the 90s, she was one of the leads on the show. And mm-hmm. Lexi was a big deal. I mean, finding out that Celeste was her mother, not her aunt, that was a big deal. Finding out Stefano was her father was a big deal. And then her going bad and keeping JT away from Hope. You know, Lexi raising Hope's baby, no, it was Hope's. I mean,
she was nasty at one time. She was like the mirror came out of her. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Telling Carrie that her and Austin would have deformed children, genetically speaking. if Sammy blackmailed her. Lexi have an affair with Brandon.
And Tech.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Lexi returning after 6 months in the hole.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was really the only time she was off the show in the past 20 years was when they wrote her off with Tech. The Tech was in the car with her. She's in the hole. She's in the cave, and Tech never showed up again. And no one wondered about him.
What was so bizarre about that is leading up to those scenes, remember Lexi was popping up in every scene possible? Like, it was so random, like, why is Lexi giving so-and-so love advice? Why is Lexi showing up at the hospital to do this or that? You know, it was, like, really random. And I remember thinking, wow, this is random, you know, that she's showing up in all these things, and then suddenly she's stuck in this hole. So it was clear that they were trying to use up her guarantee. This was, like, 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. But they it was clear they were trying to use up her guaranteed episodes, you know, and then stick her in a hole. And then they brought her back. But it's just, you know, that had to have been kind of frustrating for her to be having been on the show all those years and suddenly be stuck in a hole for 6 months, you know. But but bringing her back was cool. It was cool when she came back. She was a little crazy, and she was like a little, well, anyway. So, yeah, I mean, the point being that it's neat to kind of go back and see, probably like it is with a lot of people in your life, you know. You don't realize, you know, it's sad that it might be at a funeral or when somebody passes that you think, wow, they were there for this, they were there for that, they were, you know, because she is definitely part of the fabric of the Days of Our Lives, for sure.
Yeah, and she was very good friends with Hope. And they kind of built up that friendship a lot, too, to have Lexi turn around and stab her in the back by finding out that, I guess, Stefano switched to babies. And Lexi was raising JT, and she thought she was raising a son she adopted. So Lexi and Hope had a really strong bond back, especially when Jennifer wasn't on the show. So when it wasn't Jennifer, Hope's best friend was Lexi. Usually when Jennifer's on, usually it's Hope and Jennifer. But, yeah, it's always been a Hope and Lexi friendship. But, yeah, and the thing with one, they really didn't show her demure side. I mean, I know they were showing all the warm, fuzzy memories with Lexi. But
yeah, they didn't really show the bad stuff, really.
Yeah.
Or like her, you know.
Yeah.
But they did mention it and about Hope saying that they got past it and everything. But, I mean, they did bring it up and talk about it, but they just didn't show the actual clips from the time.
Yeah. You know, and I wish we would have saw some flashbacks with EJ and Lexi and Stefano and Lexi and Tony and Lexi. And too bad we couldn't have had Tanya Boyd back, so I would love to have seen some Lexi scenes from, you know, 20 years ago. That would have been really great to see again. So.
Yeah.
But,
I doubt they were going to show any Tony or Lexi scenes. I doubt that.
Yeah. But when we all thought it was Tony and it was really Andre, they actually had a very good brother sister relationship. You know, they were Tony and Lexi Tony and Lexi were almost, I'd say, tighter than EJ and Lexi really were.
Because I remember a lot of the scenes when she was in jail for, you know, he was there helping her and standing beside her when she was in jail for or on trial for taking the baby and stuff. He was on at that time.
Yeah, I think that was 2002. So that was kind of a shame they didn't show that. But I understand they only wanted to show clips with
Yeah, that's when he came back, 2002, yeah.
Yeah, with current cast members. But still, though, I mean, she was a Tamira, and they kind of, I thought, whitewashed that a little bit, you know, not showing any Stefano. I would have loved to have seen Alexi Stefano scene from early 90s. That would have been great to see.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Especially when she found out she was his daughter. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, now I want to go look it up on YouTube and rewatch it. When I did get to interview Renee back in, I think it was January, and she was really cool to talk to, and all of our favorite Lexi storylines were her favorites. She loved the whole Lexi found her parents' war scenes, and she loved all that stuff, and she loved it when Lexi was bad too. So yeah, so that's in our archives, you guys, anybody wants to listen to it, because they already knew then that she was retiring, because I interviewed James Reynolds pretty shortly afterwards, and it was right before the election results were going on. I was like, well, you guys have a storyline afterwards. I was like, oh, yeah, we have a storyline. And I was so thrilled. I was like, oh, great. You know, the Carvers are still going to have a storyline after the election. Well, you know, that's when Lexi found out she was dying. So, yeah, you know, be careful what you wish for. You know,
yeah.
Carver's storyline and Lexi's dead. So, then, I was really impressed with the memorial and how they were able to weave in the younger characters, too, who really didn't have that much of a past with Lexi, just having them hear her stories. Because that's kind of what, you know, a lot of people do after a funeral, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And reminisce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They go off, they go for a dinner or something, yeah, and all get together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got sidetracked on the whole Lexi thing. We didn't talk about Chandler Massey's win.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah.
That
was exciting. Happy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was the right call. I'm glad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's really good.
He's still continuing to do good work. He's one of those young actors
that can actually command. I remember the first episodes he was on. He had to go to the mansion, and he had scenes with both Stefano and Kate. And I'm thinking, you know, as a 21, 22, whatever he is, year old actor, to walk into that, and I mean, it's, of course, it's supportive. I mean, I know for a fact how supportive Lauren is, and I'm sure Joe, with working with, you know, anybody, much less young, up-and-coming kids. But how kind of intimidating that could be. You know, I mean, it could be slightly intimidating coming in going, oh, man, I need to know my stuff. I better be on point, you know. And I remember thinking, wow. I mean, of course, the veteran actors definitely help everyone bring up their game. You know, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, wow, you know, he really held his own in those scenes. I remember from the very first episode thinking, wow, he really held his own on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think he was perfect casting for it, recasting. You know, it was kind of sad to see the other kid, the previous kid, Dylan, go. But, it was really actually turned out to be a really good move because Will had to become a stronger character. And I think Chandler was able to pull that off, whereas maybe the other kid was just a little too young or whatever. But, yeah, he definitely has the chops. And, you know, he's one of those characters that, you know, usually with the younger set, they don't write that well for them, and their stories aren't usually that good, and a lot of times you don't even really want to watch. But he's one of those characters, one of those actors that really no matter what scenes he's in, no matter who he's with, I enjoy watching it, you know. I love the interplay between EJ and Will, and I love the way Chandler manages to straddle that fence between, you know, being a good kid like he always has been and being really smart and able to hold his own with the bad guys, too. And he manages to strike that balance without being annoying or obnoxious or, you know, making you want him to get off the screen or whatever. So I really enjoy him.
Like some other ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he all of a sudden with James Scott, and from what everybody says, it's not easy acting opposite James Scott. He's very challenging. A lot of people say he throws curveballs at you, or he might rehearse it one way, and then when you're doing it live, he does it another. And I mean, we've seen it too with James, when James and Taylor were acting together. You always tell they were kind of trying to one-up each other all the time. And
yeah, because
that's great,
Taylor would act too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, but I think they're two peas in a pod, to tell you the truth. I think they're very much alike. But that's good, though, because you want someone who's going to challenge you and not let you just stand there and recite your lines and not, you know, emote at all. And, you know, everybody loves Chandler and James together. They have great, you know, chemistry. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, for all Will complaining about EJ, I think he does like him, and I think he does have a bit of a crush on him.
I think he does, too.
Yeah, and I think EJ knows it, and he toys with him.
Yes, and just the little expressions and the little smirks and smiles and just the little interactions between them. I think sometimes a lot of it might be even ad-lib, too, between them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, very happy that he won. It was so cute watching him accept the award. He was, he looked kind of shocked and thrilled at the same time, and it was a wonderful moment. I still don't like those buttons on his tux. But, yeah, and you mentioned Dylan Patt and all that, and yeah, even Christopher Gers. I mean, we've had some unsuccessful Wills, so it was nice that the show didn't give up on the character and tried it again and found the right actor this time. So, I mean, who knows how long we're going to keep Chandler, though, because he's probably on to bigger and better things, but yeah, he's definitely a keeper. They can keep him.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else about the Emmys you guys want to discuss?
Well, just real quickly, as far as the fashion, you know, Lauren Coslow did a fashion review with Michael Fairman, and so if anybody hasn't seen that or hasn't read their captions, looked at the pictures and everything, should go to Michael Fairman's Twitter account at Michael Fairman, and there's probably a link there, or you can go to his site, and they have the 39th Annual Daytime Emmy Award fashion review there, and Lauren and he put together some fun, you know, it was mostly obviously done in fun, and they had some really cute categories, and some, just like they had a lot of personality. It wasn't a stuffy, you know, fashion review of, oh, well, this guy's ties too long or whatever. You know, I mean, they might have said that, but it was just fun. It was funny the way they presented it, and, you know.
Was it they have a best and a worst dress?
They had some misses. They called them misses.
Misses,
and
I
was so glad to see that Crystal Chappelle was in the misses category.
Just going to bring that up. She was in the misses.
Yeah, I was really afraid that they weren't going to go there, but they did, and I'm happy that they did, because, boy, ugh. Anyway, they were very diplomatic.
What was she thinking?
Yeah.
Her dress was bad last year.
She wasn't thinking.
Yeah, and
I heard she always dresses bad, even at fan events.
Maybe she just doesn't have, you know, some people just don't have it. You know, they just don't have the ability to, know good fashion, I guess. Maybe they should get a stylist or something. I don't know. Anyway, and there were some fun ones. I will say that they did change my mind on one. I had been making fun of Jacqueline Wood McGinnis Wood or whatever her name, McKinnis.
Mm-hmm.
I had been making fun of her dress because on stage it looked to me like a neon skeleton or something. But actually she was one of the ones that they picked as well-dressed or, you know, that they liked it. And read the caption and everything. And after looking at the picture from the red carpet, I was like, you know, that's actually a pretty badass dress, you know, and she certainly looked good in it. So, you know, and we talked about this. Lauren Coslow was on a podcast Thursday night and with Rosa Breyer, and it was a very, you know, we talked some about the fashion review and all, and so, you know, I'm sure it's difficult to judge, like, in different lighting, too. Like, they were all, you know, packed together like sardines on the red carpet going into the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then once you get on stage, it looks a little bit different and everything. So I'm sure that's a stressful thing to do. And I saw a few people were kind of critical of the pics. Of course, there's always going to be people who say that do that. But it was kind of sweet because Christian Alfonso was featured. And she wasn't featured in the quote-unquote best dressed section, but she was in, like, a special mentions or something category. And she was in a picture with John Aniston, which was just adorable. And she actually got featured as, like, best shoes or something like that. That her shoes really were awesome. So she got a close-up picture of the shoes featured in the fashion review as well. So anyway, I would encourage you guys to check it out. It's a lot of fun. Certainly like her fan page, Lauren Coglo fan club page on Facebook. And, yeah, it was lots of fun. And she posted a lot of pictures on the fan page from the Emmys, too. So lots of fun to check those out. There was a cute picture, too, on the fashion review of a Sean Christian and Blake Barris sandwich with Lauren in the middle. So I promptly retweeted that as a potential new triangle. And Blake Barris actually retweeted me on it. So anyway, so I thought that would be fun. So, but, you know, everything was in good fun, and I felt like they did a great job and, you know, featured some people I hadn't really gotten to see very well at the event, you know, from the TV. So all in all, it was a great presentation, very well done, and they seemed to have lots of fun with it. So I thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing because we didn't get to see how everybody was dressed until it was over and all the paparazzi photos came out. So that really disappointed me.
Yeah, they didn't focus on the red carpet really like they do.
No.
I mean, they said they had an hour of red carpet coverage, but they were interviewing people the whole time, and they sort of had people piling into the building behind them. And so you couldn't really get an idea of their outfit unless they happened to be one of the ones they pulled out of the line to interview. You know?
We only saw the interviews, and that was really disappointing. It was Judy Evans's dress was killer. I know Lauren's
I agreed with the criticism, though. It, the side view, ooh.
Oh,
you have to be careful.
Oh, yeah. As long as she didn't have a malfunction, I mean, you got to flaunt it. I think Judy always is risque. She was risque last year,
too.
She's always risque.
Yeah, I had her for best dress last year, and I thought her dress was great because, seriously, a lot of the dresses this year were dull and boring. And everybody had long sleeves, which was weird. It seemed like everybody was wearing sleeves and wearing black. And it's just like, well, here's Judy wearing, I think it was silver or white, and with a cutout down the side.
The nude cutout on the side.
but she's smart, though. Here's a woman who is on days part-time, practically, and sometimes she goes a whole month or two without being on at all. Yeah, she hasn't been on in a while, and she's working as a funeral director in her spare time. And, you know, we're all talking about Judy because of her dress. So that's good marketing right there. Judy knows what she's doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, she's a pro. I mean, yeah, she's been in soaps now 25-plus years. She knows what she's doing. And she looks fantastic. And you look at her like, okay, she's playing Adrian Kyriakos, who's never sexy at all. And it's like, what the hell is the show thinking? You know, she's a sexy woman. What are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, throw her a bone. You know, she's married to a sexy guy, I mean, you know, on the show. So, but, and the thing is, too, we noticed this during the show, the colors looked washed out on TV, on the dresses. The red carpet, the colors look more, were deeper, but they looked more washed out when they were on the stage. Like, Deidre's dress was navy blue on the red carpet, and then it was like a normal blue on stage. And then Christian's dress was really a bright yellow, and then looked kind of a little duller when she was on stage. So you could tell a huge difference with the colors. I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, and Shelley Henning, I had her as best dress, and, you know, I only saw like a little bit of her during the when she was on stage, actually, she was presenting. So, I think the red carpet, like with the Oscars, you kind of see everybody because either they're interviewing one person, someone's walking past, and there's enough space and enough room that you could, if you're not interested in the person being interviewed, you could watch someone else. And I think they should have done that instead of just having
everybody just having, and you could tell too, the networks told them who to interview. I don't think it was a coincidence. They interviewed Deidre, Greg, Meng, and Christian. So, and the, you know, and then Deidre and Christian, you know, were presenting that night too. So that wasn't a coincidence. And I don't think it was a coincidence either that Chris Chappelle was in the background while Christian was being interviewed. But
hi,
some
Crystal,
people
yeah,
better...
we see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone saw you.
Yeah. It just, she was actually kind of low-key. I mean, I had a hard time finding her, the picture of her dress, because we only kind of saw from the waist up on the red carpet. Mm-hmm. It actually was worse from the waist down, but it's practically down to her ankles. And I thought that was kind of odd. And there's no split or anything. You know, you saw really no leg at all whatsoever. And I had a very, very hard time finding a picture of her dress. But I wanted her to put her down as a worse dress. But, you know,
it looked like a towel.
Yeah, it looked like a towel on camera.
It looked like a beach,
you know?
Cover-up is what it looked like,
yeah,
to me from what I saw.
Oh, awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
That's
but,
all
I mean,
it looked like. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think in person it might have looked a little nicer. I think it was more silvery than, but like on TV, it kind of came off as gray, and I think it might have been a bit more silvery. It might have looked a lot nicer in person, but a lot of people had her on worse dress, so I don't think it was just us who weren't that impressed with her dress. Oh, and Susan Lucci in her hair, holy cow. She got bashed
by
everybody
tribute,
on that.
And that tribute to her character was embarrassing. I felt actually sorry for her for delivering that. It was awful. And I'm not a Lucci fan. I mean, I watched it back in the day in the 80s and stuff. But, you know, I like her generally as a person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, my gosh, it was like she was kind of channeling Erica. And, you know, there was a part of me that wanted to say, you know what, it's not a real person, just so you know, herself, you know, she's not a real person. And I know when you play a character for that long, you really do love them and identify with them and all, but I don't know who wrote the speech, but it was absolutely uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable listening to it.
It was almost like
she was basically paying tribute. It would have been okay if somebody else was paying tribute.
Well, was she pretending? Was she talking like she was Erica? Because
no,
I missed that part.
No, she wasn't really talking like it, but it was just, I don't know, I can't explain it, but it was just really awkward. And I would have not wanted to do it if I were her. So,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. It almost seemed like she was ad-libbing, or maybe there was something wrong with the prompter. Because she was being redundant, and it kind of wasn't rambling and not making much sense.
Yeah, maybe there was a problem. I hadn't heard about that, but maybe so.
Yeah, but when Bethany was on there presenting for this bizarre AOL online video stuff, and she was waiting for the winner and the teleprompter and wouldn't tell her who the winner was, and that was pretty funny. So, but Bethany's the right person to have in that situation, but she can handle it. But I don't know. It didn't really make much sense. And then Susan was on a lot during the telecast, and her hair was really atrocious. And it seems like she does wear a red dress every single year. Do you know the bottom of her dress this year was a little different? But and she's got a new gig, too. She's going to be in the Marcieri show that he's doing with the Devious Maids on Lifetime. So, I mean, she has a new gig already. So, then... yeah, the whole thing was odd. I think it would have been better if they just showed clips from One Life and All My Children instead of just having Susan. And why would you have Cameron Matheson up there, too? I mean, you know, couldn't they find something a little bit more iconic than Cameron Matheson from All My Children? I just thought that was kind of odd. But, oh, well. So, let me think. What else do we have going on? Oh, I forgot to hit the half cuts, and they were tweeting a lot during the Emmys, so it's Mark Hapka's parents, at Bob Hapka and at Amy Hapka. So Mark was at the Emmys. I guess he came with Shelley Hennick, I think.
Well,
he was her date or something.
He didn't come with Lindsay?
He came with someone.
Girlfriend?
Oh, I don't know, but I just know he was at the
he's
Emmys.
He's been dating Lindsay Godfrey for a couple years. She was actually on the best dress list, I noticed, in the yellow.
Oh, well, Oh, what show is she on?
B&B. I think she plays the daughter of the lesbian, soon-to-be lesbian couple that's on there.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, they had a neat article in one of the mags about her. She had leukemia or something as a teenager when she turned 18. I didn't get all the details. I just skimmed through it. But she's actually overcome quite a bit to be, you know, to be doing what she's doing. So sounds like a neat girl.
Oh, okay, so that's why he was there.
Speaking of that,
have
you pimped a half kiss? Have we pimped a half kiss yet?
Yeah, I just did. Like, crap, I forgot. 40 minutes of this show, I remember the half kiss, yeah. But they're not on Twitter, so they're not going to know. I didn't pimp them.
We're abused over and over again, yet we still continue to go back for more.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty funny. Yeah, their commentary of the Emmys was pretty good. So what was Kate up to this week, Anna?
Well, she's only on one episode that I'm aware of, which is not very subpar, but is seeming to be more and more normal these days, unfortunately. We need more Kate. Hear that, writers? The only thing that I saw this week was she and Ian were working at Titan, and basically, you know, she was talking about going to the memorial, Lexi's memorial, and he said, "Oh, well, I'll take you, you know, I'll go with you, you know," and he was being really sweet and comforted her and everything. And she's like, "No, that's okay, I can go by myself." And she said, "It'd probably be better if you didn't go to Shitster," basically. and then he said, "Well, I hope Brady doesn't show up all, you know, like higher than a kite." And she's like, "Oh, why do you say that? That's an odd comment to make." And he says, "Well, you know, he's been running around town like, acting like an idiot, ruining our business deals and everything, blah, blah, blah." You know, so basically, you know, trying to act like this is some big concern of his. And she's like, "Why does this even concern you? Why is this even an issue? Why are you bringing it up?" And then as they continue to talk, the light bulb goes on for Kate, and she realizes that, oh yeah, he took a page from my book, and he's poisoning Brady. So, so they explore that whole thing. She, you know, wonders what he's up to, and he's deny. But she knows, she's figured out that he's in on this somehow. And they explore that again this week, probably with the same dialogue, unfortunately, because the way they're writing things these days. But you had tweeted, I noticed that you had tweeted, and unless they show more on Monday, here, you know, all of Wednesday's episode for Kate and Ian was about them about her going to the memorial. And she, even as she's leaving, she says, you know, her parting shot, he's like, "Are you sure you don't want me to go?" And she says something like, "No, I'll be fine on my own," or something like that. And I was like, "Oh, that's ominous." But anyway, she basically leaves to go to the memorial, and then, like you tweeted, she wasn't at the memorial at all.
Mm-mm.
Like, she didn't show up anywhere. So quite odd and frustrating for Kate.
Writing.
And I mean memorial for the wedding. I mean memorial. Mm-hmm. But that was her stepdaughter. Still technically is her stepdaughter. And she loved Lexi and Theo, and, you know, she knew Abe all those years. I mean, it's just ridiculous that she wouldn't have been featured as a part of that whole process. So, you know, we Kate fans were pissed about that.
Oh, yeah, and Austin and Carrie have always been involved with Lexi.
Yeah.
And Lucas has always been around, too, and Billy. And they all became big,
all
really, in the 90s.
There.
They all should have been there instead of
Victor and Maggie.
Yeah,
they all should have been there.
Yeah, well, yeah, Victor and Maggie not
Carolyn.
Being there is weird because, you know, yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of, that was really odd. And I was reading Renee Jones' interview that she did, and she said Patrick Muldoon 20 years ago came up with Sexy Lexi. I remember when we interviewed on Patrick, he said he wanted to be hooked up with Lexi just, you know, a couple months ago. Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously, if you talk to all the actors on the show, they all have—they all have a crush on Renee Jones. They all do.
Of course,
it's
beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think Tao.
Yeah, he said if they weren't brother and sister.
Yeah, he would want to be paired up with Lexi. So, we got Shelly in the chat room. Hi, Shelly. So, that was. Yeah, that was odd that Kate and her children weren't there. That was just kind of odd and didn't make much sense at all. And that's the one thing that really disappointed me about the memorial. There's two things. One, the lack of the Demira mentions, her being a Demira, and lack of Demira clips. And the other one was Kate and her kids not being there. That really didn't make any sense. Oh, we have to talk about Nicole. Oh, my God.
Do we? We have to talk about Nicole?
There's a talk about Nicole.
If we have to talk to Nicole, then we actually
have to talk about
the office.
Dan. Yes.
I used to love Nicole. And I still love Ari Zucker. But since she's been pregnant, Nicole has gone so dull. And I'm just disappointed.
They're writing her really crappy right now.
My God. Yeah. And usually, I didn't have a problem with Nicole giving Chloe flesh-eating bacteria. That actually didn't bother me. Ariane sold it to me, and I don't like Chloe anyway, so that didn't bother me at all. And I like that story better than the beast sex on the desk, and then Nicole hiding bullets behind her back at AJ's apartment that she found in the silverware drawer.
Yeah.
So
come on, EJ. He wasn't believing her though.
But how did she get the bullets from behind her back? And
I
don't know where she. And in her purse. How did she do that?
They did. He brought her a piece of carrot cake from the pub, and she says, "Oh, I want to eat it." He says, "Well, let me get." He was going to go get her a fork to eat it. So she sat down on the couch and her purse was right there. So he went behind her, was getting in the drawer, and she got her purse, took it. It was like she sat down on the couch, took it from behind her back, and the purse was like sitting on the side of the couch, and she put the bullets in her purse. And he didn't see.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But didn't he notice the bullets were in his silverware drawer?
I guess not. I don't know. I think he was in another drawer. I don't know. But that's what he, that's how they did that. But,
that was funny. Yeah, I don't know. Just Nicole willing to put EJ in jail and to keep him away from her baby when she kind of still is half in love with him.
That's getting so old,
Yeah.
Let him see, why are you keeping the baby from him? He's going to find out sooner or later. He knows it's his.
She keeps talking
she's not
about
fooling
it,
him.
Overhear it.
Yeah, he's not going to give up on it.
Spoiler for this week, actually. I think he does overhear it, officially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Rafe tells Sammy he didn't get anybody pregnant because Sammy finds out this week that Carrie's pregnant. And Ray says, "Well, I think," and Sammy accuses him of being the father of Carrie's baby. And Ray said, "I didn't get anybody pregnant, and need you to hear them." And then I guess Ray covers himself and says, "Oh, I was talking about Carrie." All EJ has to do is when Nicole's not looking, pull out a piece of the baby's hair or swallow the baby's mouth and get the DNA tested. That's all he has to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Chloe, for him, she should, if she really didn't want him around, she should have just left town. It's not hard. Seriously, he can just go get the baby brush or even get a dirty diaper and get the DNA tested. So, you can't hide, not leave DNA somewhere.
Right.
So, it's time for this to kind of end. So, maybe when Carrie and Austin leave town, maybe Nicole can clean them. But the whole thing with Nicole is just so dumb. Go ahead, honey.
We did get to see Johnny and Sydney. We hadn't seen Johnny and Sydney for a while.
Mm-hmm. They were so cute.
They are cute. Yeah.
They're so adorable.
Yeah, yeah, Johnny asked them to dance, and Johnny sang Lexi Fix My Eye, and that was really sweet, too.
Yeah.
Lexi what?
Lexi fixed his eye.
Aww.
Yeah, he was so cute. Yeah, wanted EJ and Sammy to dance. And then EJ and Sammy were having a conversation, which he said to that Lexi said if they could just get past their fighting, that they could, you know, really be a good couple.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Oh. So, and they kind of looked at each other like, you know, that would never work, you know. But you could see the connection there, like kind of Lexi kind of, in a way, bringing them together.
Mm-hmm.
By saying
that. Yeah, and Lexi did say that. She said, if you guys stop trying to kill each other, you know,
you could
make each other. She did really just say that. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the gross thing about Nicole was she wore the same outfit the entire week.
Like, yes, she did.
Yeah, it was the nasty, I could hump anyone with 30 seconds notice outfit.
Yeah, and then she kept wearing it the entire week.
Yeah.
So that was really weird and creepy. But actually, you know, their date on Friday wasn't really that bad. She was actually complaining. She was complaining he was predictable. And he went over. They were at the Horton Square, and he went over and grabbed a guitar and pretended he was going to serenade her. And it was kind of cute. And at the end, he's like, she's like, oh, we're not the type of people who care about holding hands and first kisses. And she kind of kicked herself in the butt. And she kind of kicked herself in the butt after she said that, and they separated. And then she's going to comment, oh, well, maybe your wife felt that way. And then later in the episode, he came back for her to give her a first aid kiss.
I love it how it's like you scrub on his desk was the first date, and then it's like it's all backwards here.
Their second date is what the first date should have been. Yeah, their second date was like what the first date should have been.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That's the problem with the show is that they keep putting the car before the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the problem, and that's why no one likes these couples, because, you know, back in the 80s, we'd wait a year for a couple to kiss. You know what I mean? I mean, everything was an event.
Oh, yeah, Beau and Hope and all that.
Beau and Hope forever, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and making love for someone, that was an event. That was a big deal.
It's
not an event anymore. That's why nobody cares. You know?
That's so sad.
Yeah, the whole hooking up thing, it's just not romantic. No one's really, you know, Dan and Nicole had something going on before this besides just kind of flirting with each other in a raunchy type of way. You know, maybe you could buy it, but there was really no contact between them except for her trying to manipulate him into doing what she wanted with the paternity test. So it really wasn't. You know, there's no slow burn. There's no slow burn. They just don't seem like a legitimate couple. They just seem like he seems like Mr. Right now instead of Mr. Right. But that's the thing, though, too. You kind of think Nicole's feeling that, too, that maybe she screwed up thinking he was Mr. Right now, and maybe he was Mr. Right. I think she's kind of regretting.
Regretting. That's kind of what it seemed like.
Yeah. You know? So that's great acting by Ariana, though.
What's not to love about your first date being, you know, at least he cleared off the desk for her. I mean, you know, chivalry is dead. He cleared the deck for her so she could, like...
He threw everything off the desk.
He could have at least, like, put a cushion up there for her or something. But, you know, I mean, like, I'm not opposed to desk sex, but usually that, to me, you know, it's nice if it follows, like, months of build-up or...
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, like, I love Kate and EJ's, you know, office.
Kate
and
EJ.
But then again, they had an agreement. They had an arrangement. You know, they were business partners and partners with benefits, so to speak. And I've always said I would love those company benefits.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to death sex at all, and actually I recommend it. Just wondering. or tables or whatever, flat surfaces, countertops, it's all good. But let me think what else was going on. Yeah, we were talked about Bradison a little bit. And let's talk about Bo and Ciara. Marianne, do you want to talk about Bo and his eulogy and Ciara and Hope in the pub on Monday?
Oh, Ciara. Yeah, they were, Ciara was sitting there. She was drawing a picture for Theo, and Bo and Hope were talking, and Bo was writing the eulogy for Lexi, and then he read it. And I can't really remember what all it said. I wish I did, but it was written well, you know, describing Lexi and the feelings, and he kind of tied in, like, his feelings for Hope. How, like, Abe met, like, somebody, and exactly like how he felt about Hope. And it was really good.
Sweet.
Right, yes. It
Such
was
a
just
shout
really.
Out to their history.
And as he was, yeah, right. Yeah, and a little bit of, like, the history between them and the both couples. And, of course, as he was reading it, he started breaking up, and Hope started breaking up. And then Ciara came over and showed the picture to Hope and stuff. But, yeah, I thought it was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, see, and those scenes prove that, you know, while we do love adventure and we love, you know, the drama and everything, those scenes, and even though they're scenes and not a story, they're scenes that are part of a story, but those scenes really have an impact, and they really hold your attention. You really, because a lot of times lately I haven't been paying attention to what else Bo and Hope have been doing, you know, or like during the whole, like, Jope stuff and the Alamania crap, I fast forwarded through 95% of that. But it's like the most exciting thing for me was when John had to drop and roll under the bed but at that time. But, you know, I guess my thing is we don't always need, like, big production, although I do love it when they have big gatherings and big events. It's like, but if you're a good or a great writer like Carolyn Coulton is, that dialogue just pulls you in, you know? It makes you feel like you're connecting to those characters and to that history. And now, you know, like, last week I was like, well, or 2 weeks ago, I was like, well, if Peter leaves, you know, I'm kind of indifferent because, I mean, I've always loved Bope, but they've been kind of boring or whatever. You know, but then I see things like that, and that's what makes me remember how wonderful they are and were, and makes me remember what I loved about them. And so it's not necessarily being in a safe house and the stupid crap that went on there or some of these other stupid things that they've had been doing, but it's, you know, it's those types of poignant scenes. And, of course, you need a story around it, too, but those are the things that I think soap fans want to see. And, I mean, it totally pulled me in, whereas a lot of the stuff I was fast-forwarding, you know, the Melanie kidnapping, don't care, don't want to care, you know, Gabby, who cares, don't want to care, you know, so, I don't know.
Yeah, the Melanie napping by far was the low point of the week.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And,
that was bad.
Yeah, Bo was talking, because I actually watched the episode yesterday. Bo was, he was talking about finding the right person. And he's talking about Hope. Then he was really talking about Abe finding the right person in Lexi. And then at the end, he kind of tied it in with himself and Hope. And, you know, and Peter started tearing up and choking up. I'm like, oh, my God. Peter talking about
acting. And I'm talking about how his mom had told him, like, he was always like, when he was in the Merchant Marines, I'm never going to be tied down. I don't want to be tied down.
Right,
and
yeah.
He's like, well, when you meet the right woman or whatever it was that she said, you know, the way they tied all that in. And when he mentioned the Merchant Marines and all, it takes you back to the 80s. It takes you back to the beginning of why you love that couple. And that's why I love the Coulitons, because they can do that with a script. You know, no matter how bad the overarching stories might be at times,
they're awesome when it comes to those types of touches. I just knew it had to be one of them. When I looked at the credits, I knew it had to be one of them. And I'm sure the actors enjoy getting those scripts.
I mean, it was definitely Peter crying and not Bella. And it was just like, oh, my God. I can't handle men crying. That just drives me crazy. I can't do it. I just start crying.
Oh,
and
no.
Then,
well,
which,
and then the
yeah.
week before when he and Abe were
with
crying
Abe.
Together. Oh,
yeah.
That was so touching. I was so glad they had that scene. That was those scenes. Those are so touching.
Yeah, and then poor Ciara being paranoid that Hope's going to leave, too. Oh, my God.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah,
she like
just got up.
Like, she didn't want her to leave the room. Wah! She's adorable.
Yeah, it was a good kids' week. It's kind of odd, though. They didn't have Ciara at the memorial, though. It was Theo and Sydney and Johnny. They didn't have Allie there, either. So that was kind of odd. Huh. And Will wasn't there. So, yeah, it's kind of odd. Some Allie did that. Because, I mean... It seemed odd Ciara wouldn't be there, but she's Theo's best friend.
And I don't think it continues to Monday. I was thinking, well, maybe we'll see more on Monday, but I don't think...
I don't know. No, there's Hope toasted at the end, and you got the impression that was the end of it.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I did read Monday spoilers.
Job.
Yeah, I read Monday spoilers. There's nothing more on Monday.
Yeah.
They go on to something else.
So I guess we're just supposed to assume all those people were there. We just didn't get to see them actually talk about her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer wrote in the chat room, Allie always gets the shaft. Well, it's true. If Lucas isn't around, no one cares about Allie. Because it's all about EJ's kids,
true.
Really. Yeah.
We're saying she's going to be a foot taller than Johnny pretty soon.
Oh, and the Johnny twins, they actually did get a primetime series. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so we might not have them for that much
crap.
Longer. I know. How are they going to replace it? I mean, seriously.
What series is it? What network?
I don't know, but people were talking about it on Twitter. But I heard they got on a pilot, and then the series got picked up, and they're going to be in the series. Yep.
Well, maybe it'll be on NBC and it'll be good cross-marketing for them.
I will actually, whatever show it is, I will actually watch it.
I will, too. Those kids are so adorable.
Yeah,
oh, I know. My sons love them, too. They absolutely love Johnny.
I wonder if they'll get to play twins or if it'll still be a thing where they're substituted.
I'm assuming the substitutes, they're playing, what, only four or five now, something like that?
Oh, they're older than that. I think they're six or so, yeah. But they're so adorable. I will cry the day they soar. If they soar as those kids, that will make me cry. I will literally be upset because they are so adorable. They're so perfect for that. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that they could work out something where they could do both. But I know with the child actor laws and all that, I don't know if they can only do a certain amount per week or whatever. Or, you know.
Yeah, that'd be really hard. I mean,
but you know, honestly, the writer Margar didn't have, you know, before this, the kids were on all the time, and the kids were the plot device for everything.
Yeah.
And I noticed that with Margar, they really didn't write for the kids all that much. There were weeks that went by that we didn't even see Theo or Ciara or whatever, and it's kind of like, I kind of felt like either they, for production costs, they decided not to have them on because they, you know, I mean, they obviously take more time and stuff like that probably and are a little bit more of a directing hassle. So, I mean, I hate to say it, but just from a purely business standpoint. I kind of wondered, you know, why there was the de-emphasis on the kids all of a sudden. But they, you know, so they're not on that much. So it might be one of those things where if they only tape a couple hours a week, maybe it's not that big a deal. You know, who knows? But can you imagine being a kid and having two gigs like that? Like,
holy
you know?
Cow. Yeah.
They are really adorable.
Yeah, I actually don't mind them being cubs. I don't want them being leads all the time. Because whenever they're leads, it's, you know, Johnny having cancer and it's Cindy being kidnapped.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
That stuff gets old. That stuff's really old. And, you know, let's move on. And especially with Nicole being pregnant. I mean, this is the first pregnancy, well, I guess since Chloe had her baby, But, you know, we never we only saw that baby for a couple of months. First, Nadia was let go. But, yeah, it just, you know, what are they going to do with Nicole? I was thinking about that today. Oh, is the baby going to be a preemie? Is EJ going to kidnap it? Is Nicole going to kidnap it? Is there going to have health problems? And, you know, we kind of always go through this all the time. And usually it's then who delivers the baby, because no one ever has a baby in the hospital. And, you know, yeah, in a couple months we're going to probably go through the baby phase again. So, but, I mean, you know, seriously, the poor Allie, she's never been kidnapped. She's never had cancer. I guess she did have a paternity question when she was in utero because the test results kept getting mixed and messed up and all that. And,
well, and she was almost, her stem cells were almost used to save Stefano at one point. So that's traumatic if you, you know. Someday when somebody explains that to her that, you know, her mother was kidnapped. Her mother was kidnapped while she was in utero with her brother and was stolen in order to be used to save Stefano's life with their fresh Demira stem cells, which wouldn't have helped anyway since she was a Horton after all, but oh well. The most troubling aspect of that story will always be that John and Marlena were busy, like, humping each other in the car. So, you know, when that was going on. So,
it was on Sammy's couch. It was on the Lumi couch.
Yeah, on the couch, and then they ran out, and they were like, the car? They looked at each other like, ooh, I'm like, oh, please. Your daughter and your two grandchildren are in peril, and you're worried about humping each other. Please.
Yes.
Didn't they have an incident like that this week, too, where they were somewhere, something having to do with Lexi or something dying, and they were, like, being horny or something? Somebody was tweeting about it. They were, like, all excited that they were getting the scene or whatever, that they were doing the scene, and I was like, are you kidding me?
And this was anyway. John and Marlena, or was this somebody else?
No.
John and Marlena. They were kind of being frisky or something. Or maybe they were watching a different episode. I don't know. It was definitely John and Marlena.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Okay.
This week?
Yeah,
it was tweeted this week that that person might have been watching an old video. I don't know. I just assumed it was during this week's episode. Who knows? But anyway.
Yeah, but since Sally's been born, though, I mean, she might actually end up being the most well-adjusted child on the show.
Which in and of itself could be traumatic if you're the only normal kid in town. That in and of itself could be its own, you know, disaster. Like, nobody to relate to. There's nobody in the city that has, you know, in the town that has, you know, no major traumatic experiences or anything, you know, post-utero. Sad. Well, she does have Sammy as a mother, so I'm sure there will always be that.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to bring on, let's see, I think it's Angela. Angela wants to talk. Hello, this is Angela.
Hey there, how are y'all doing?
There she is. All right, what's up? What's on your mind?
Oh, no, I was just listening. I don't have any specific comments, I don't think, actually, tonight. I just, you know, was enjoying listening to you guys.
Oh,
okay.
What did you think of the dance on Friday?
Pardon?
Did you like the dance on Friday?
I actually haven't seen it. So I haven't either.
Truth be told,
can't tell you. I'm certainly trying to catch the show some, and certainly trying to follow the story. But like I said, right now I've got a lot of stuff going on, and until the new writers really start, I'm just not too focused on it.
Yeah, I recommend though watching Monday and Friday from last week if you get the chance.
I heard the music was good. I heard they actually, you know, it was an older song that they used, you know, as far as the music goes.
Hmm.
On Friday,
you know, I didn't even notice. Oh yeah, they did. It was an older song for Lexi. Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't even think of that. I'm like, oh, yeah, they had to pay for that one. Oh, I'll have to rewatch it again. Yeah, they've,
I'm trying to think what it is. Mm-hmm.
Crap, I can't remember offhand.
I can't remember either.
That was good. That was good. I just, listening to what, I agree with what everybody is saying about the show right now. I think it's just, it's pieces and parts. It's just, there's some things that are just precious, and they did do some really good things with Lexi, and, very emotional things with her, with that whole story. And, it's clear, there's just, Ari Booker must have come in, for like 4 days to film everything that she was going to film. That's why she's in the same outfit over and over again. And just, and then, people that would logically be there that aren't, I think everything has been pieces and parts for them for a while. And I think they're just kind of cutting and pasting and putting stuff together. Until we see the new stuff. Well, do you think we'll know when the new stuff starts in July? I know it's July, but do we know if it's like the end of the month or is it first of the month?
The new writing comes in?
The old writers are through to the Olympics, and I think I'm not clear on whether when you come back from the Olympics, if it's the new writing all of a sudden, or if there's still a little bit of old writers left, from what I understand.
Well,
Christy Clark said she did.
The cliffhanger, I think, is new.
Unless they redid it, because they were already talking about the big cliffhanger they were going to do at the Olympics, before the Olympics. They had been talking about that for months. So they have that plan for a long time. But I'm pretty sure that, at least it's kind of fixed in my mind, that based on the timing of when the writers were actually let go, it seemed like it was toward the end of April, because the Outfest was around, like, throwing this out around April 24th or something, a totally random date, something like that. It seemed like I calculated it about 3 months from that point. So I think their material goes through that point, which would be the end of July, basically.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. Because they probably have deleted some scenes, edited out some things along the way, they might even have moved the timeline up so that the new writers could write the cliffhanger. So, but in terms of the timing of when the old writers were let go, it would have been up to the Olympics or so.
Yeah. I think, again, and I'm not sure either, but I think that's probably accurate. I do think that, probably the success of the show going on hinges a lot on them making sure that they've got people tuning back in after the Olympics. So I feel like even if there had been something planned, I think that probably the new writers have been working on that. I think that there is from what I've understood, there are definitely changes and things that you'll see as of in July, in July, whether it's the first day or not. And then also some of the interviews I've listened to from the Emmys, with James Scott that I've listened to, where he's talking about some of this new, the scripts and things that are going forward. But he doesn't say specifically what date, but, in two different parts of the interview, he would say that the cliffhanger, talking about how the cliffhanger was, you really don't know who's alive, who's dead, exactly what's going on. And then, he was just saying, as far as the writing goes, with some of the best that he's seen as long as he's ever been on the show. So I'm pretty confident he sure isn't talking about right now. So my plan is that in July I'll get back really focused with it. But I, like I said, I, it's, uh, it's just so hit or miss. And but y'all covered
what are you,
that.
What are you looking forward to? What do you think is magically going to happen? I mean, from the things that you've read, because I haven't read a lot of spoilers, so I don't really know. But I mean, what are you looking forward to the most from what you gather is going to happen with the new writers?
Oh boy!
Not to put you on the spot, but I guess I just did.
You know, just
no, but I mean, what ray of light are you seeing?
That is light. No, ask
are you smoking some really good weed? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, I'm hoping that they will show more of something with EJ, obviously, and it's something that makes sense. So, like I said, I don't, you know, there's a lot of discussion, of course, that EJ and Sammy are going to get together this summer or fall or whatever it is. I hope that happens. And but I'm not, I don't know, I guess I'm just, you know, in a way I'm trying to not pigeonhole everything into it's going to be X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Yeah, I know there's some things in my mind that, you know, I particularly don't want to see, but I guess at this point I'm just hoping that, you know, it's well written. Even if I don't necessarily like the pairing, like I said, of everybody that they put together or whatever, I just hope that the writing is good and it's consistent.
Yeah.
and they bring
Wait,
back.
Wait, you said consistent? You said consistent? Wait a minute. We already discussed this earlier in the podcast. They don't have consistency anymore. That went out in the 80s. No, I'm just kidding. No,
I know. Believe me, I agree with you. But I'm thinking, whether the show is on for 50 more years, which I hope it is, or 5 more years, or up until 2013, I want the show to have dignity, and I want it to make sense, and I want the characters to be in keeping with it, with the way they have always been, and not just putting people together. Cause, you know, I mean, Dr. Dan, you know, John Christian's a great actor. I think I've seen him in a lot of movies and a lot of other things. He's really good. And I don't know that, I'm not saying that he's not good on Days, but I just feel like, I'm tired of this character just being written, as a gigolo. I don't know what else to say.
Well, see, my thing is, I saw a huge inconsistency. And he's walking around with his shaky hand for I don't know how many months now. But he did an awfully swift job. He made swift business of clearing that desk off. That's all I'm saying. I don't know. Didn't look like his hand was shaking too much during that. That's all I'm going to say.
That's what I'm saying.
They forgot
so
about that.
Bad.
He's like Philip. He has that spontaneous regeneration of formerly lost limbs that Philip had.
Yeah.
When they said, oh, you don't have to worry about the limp right now. So in some scenes, Dan is sitting there rubbing his shaking hand, and in other scenes, he's clearing the desk so he can like hump a pregnant woman, you know. So one of his patients is a matter of fact.
You're
but
right.
Anyway.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, and this goes back to, you know, the story at Days is always pretty much more interesting behind the scenes than it is on screen, and you know, who knows, you know, all that has gone on between, you know, towards the end of last year and. And now, but, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, the whole story, like, you know, the egg baby thing, where did that story come from?
That's
absolutely insane. Nobody likes it. And it's just, I say nobody. A lot of people have expressed that they don't like it. And that's silly. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, he has the mystery ailment, you know, like Bill Horton did, 30 years ago with the shaky hand thing. And he's leaving town just kind of like Bill Horton did. And then, you know, and then they say goodbye to him. They said goodbye to him for like a month and a half.
I know.
People, and Terry and I, he's gone less off screen a week or something, you know, and then he's back. No mention of the shaky hand. And, he was just, you know, like I said, it's just sad. And then I read, this was really, I thought this was on QT. I read this, I don't know. Where this week, somewhere, maybe somebody on Twitter said it, But, you know, they were saying, you know, in one scene they're talking about, you know, how Nicole, and you may, I apologize, I didn't see hear the whole front first end of the show, so if y'all mentioned this, I apologize if I'm repeating something. But, you know, they're talking about Nicole's, you know, at-risk pregnancy and all the things that, you know, she needs, you know, supposed to do to be staying calm and this, that, and the other. But yet she and Dr. Dam get together on a desk in the office. You know that?
Well, see, that's
I don't
what
know
I was
that.
Saying is that that's exactly, I mean, that's what a woman would think, though. Wait, she's an at-risk pregnancy. And, I mean, not that you can't have sex, but I'm just saying.
Right.
You know, maybe not like right then on the desk on a hard surface like that. You know, maybe at least like, you know, maybe she should have like thrown her on the couch or something at least, you know. I mean, you know. So, I don't know. I thought that exact same thing. It's like, here's this doctor is talking to her about, you know, this high-risk pregnancy, and this is this second miracle baby, and she's already been through this horrendous
yeah, really,
loss
for somebody that wasn't
child.
Supposed to have a baby at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, the loss of a child. I mean,
she's
I'd be, like, strapping on a belt and, like, don't you come near me, you asshole. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. Excuse my friend. But, I mean, I'm just saying, if it were that, you know, it's like we're, you know, it's like Stefano guarded the stupid egg better than she's guarding the baby right now. You know, so I just thought that was completely misguided on so many levels. But, anyway.
Well, that brings up what I think as far as something else to look forward to is I don't think Stefano is dead. But I'll never think
no.
Stefano is
no.
So,
of course
I, you
not.
Know, I'm anticipating that he has been behind this whole, his own, you know,
mm-hmm.
death hoax, whatever this has been, for, you know, for good reason. Because, you know, I just, like I said, I would, even if, and I understand even Joe's leaving and he's retiring and he may be not on the show full time. And I understand all that, but I just don't think, you know, Stefano is almost like a mythical character at this point, you know, to me,
yeah.
You know. It's just,
I don't know. You
he's
know,
not
one
really
thing
going
I've,
away.
We'll never believe
just,
it.
One thing I've noticed, and I don't know if this is because Tomlin's at the helm of the writing staff now, you know, he's not the EVP or the executive producer, but you know, when he was executive producer, things were pretty locked down. I mean, they didn't leak a whole lot of stuff as far as story. I mean, purposely leak. In other words, they didn't do a lot of some weeks they didn't even put spoilers in the magazines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm noticing that again a little bit because not that I really go looking for spoilers, but, like, I just haven't heard a lot of people really talking about things that they've heard that are going to be happening with the new writers. So it's kind of interesting, you know. I just haven't seen a whole lot of there's speculation, but I haven't seen a whole lot of actual, like, of the show coming out with. Well, you know how Kenny used to come out with his 3-month spoilers and ruin everything for everyone.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we haven't seen those for a while. I'm pretty convinced that Ken's locked up in a closet somewhere writing checks, and as he slips them under the broom closet, you know, so they can pay
not
the bills.
Good for.
And then, you know, otherwise he's sitting in the back watching, you know, old clips of Days or something. I don't know. I mean, because they aren't letting him talk. I mean, and I know he owns the thing, and I mean no disrespect, because thankfully for us, he has kept the show on the air all these years, you know, so I give him credit for that, you know. He could have left at different times, you know, and I credit him with it, keeping it alive. But at the same time, have you noticed it's been quite a while since he's ruined things for us?
Yeah.
you
have a good point.
Oh, give him time. Give him time. He will.
No, I try very hard not to get cynical about Ken Corday because what Anna's saying is true. I had the show been owned by the network, it would have been gone a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I think that's I think there's a blessing about the show. Uh-huh. Obviously, you know, but simply
yeah.
because when you read the history of. And again, I know I plug this book every single time I'm on here, but so help me, the book, the William J. Bell book, The Young and the Restless Life of William J. Bell is an excellent book. It really is quite good. And, you know, and it gives insight into Days, too, into what happened. And at the beginning even. And it's quite purely providence in a lot of ways that the show has survived, you know, so many things that other shows have fallen by the wayside. So, you know, we're fortunate, you know, I feel for the fans of One Life to Live and All My Children that really didn't have a chance even to say goodbye properly. And really haven't been treated with very much respect, especially the people with One Life to Live have not been treated with the respect. And after 40 years, and like I said, and plus the show was really good, and they just totally ignored it from an Emmy perspective or from almost any perspective. I was just sad. But so we're fortunate in so many ways with Days, but I think that I guess it makes sense for them not to reveal too much. First of all, they got the writers in there. They've got to be sitting down really trying to come up with, I hope they're coming up with a true Bible of a story of it. This is the way it's going to go, you know, but then also an alternate plan if, you know, something doesn't go exactly right. Then here's, you know, you haven't painted yourself into a complete picture, a complete corner. And you know, it's just it's a dangerous time for them to say very much because people are so frustrated, and a lot of people aren't really watching or not watching as closely as they normally do because things are kind of scattered and we know it's a transition. So if they put out too much and then it's something that you don't want to see, then, you know, even that could do more harm than good. But the trick is that there's magazines to stay in business, and that and without any spoilers at all, then, you know, they're going to have a tough time selling magazines or whatever else they're trying to do. So it's just a tough time. I don't know what the solution is. A lot of people have asked the question about, well, should we just go back to not having spoilers at all? You know, like before the internet and before a lot of other things. And
yeah,
that would be
a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But
I enjoyed it back then when they didn't know what was going to happen.
It is. Well, yeah, there's shows. Like, I've watched General Hospital for a long time, not nearly as long as Days, and it doesn't mean it means something to me. But I again respect all the shows, but I, you know, have been watching it on and off since the 80s. And but, you know, I rarely, if ever, do I read spoilers for General Hospital. Very rarely, you know. So I don't necessarily know what's going to happen, you know, on that show when I watch it. And so it's just a different experience. But I don't, you know, like I said, I think when you really genuinely, you know, and it's kind of quote unquote your show, you know, it's kind of like a grandmother term. But, you know, you end up, you know, you're more interested in the detail of what's going on, or at least I am. And so I think it would be hard for them to go completely without spoilers. It would be great if they could, but I just don't know if that's even realistic in this day and time, long term, to do that. But I'm excited that I'm excited that they recognized there was a problem. I think we can tell now that there was a problem, and I think, you know, not to take away, because there were some really good things that Mardar did, and you know so much of the things that had gone wrong earlier with Dina Higley, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, obviously, that you know, that they did a tremendous amount to correct a lot of the things that, you know, that had been just torn asunder. But I don't know. It's just still hard for me to. It's hard for me to still believe that Days won the writing team award at the Emmys, and I can't believe that. I don't understand how Dina was still on the list of writers on November the 7th. She got an Emmy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that. Anyway, but to focus on the positive, you know, we'll just see. Like I said, I think it's going to be good. This, you know, 'cause if they can't make it with these writers that are coming up, yeah, this is a really good group. And so I'm hopeful. And but I do think, and you know, there's never going to be a time when everybody is paired up like everybody wants them to be. And so I think that, you know, it's probably, you know, I'm just hoping for a good show and consistency of some sort of characters. And
yep, is there anything, any parting shots coming near the end of the show? Is there anything we left out?
Can't think of anything.
All out of ideas. All right, we'll see everybody next week and have a happy 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.